It's the Shooting USA Podcast, recording this time from Mike Irvine's office here at the Shooting USA headquarters in Franklin, Tennessee. What do you say, Mike?
Hey, not much. This is fun for me. This is the first time doing this in the studio. I've only ever talked to you over the phone while I've been out on the road, and who knew my office was so versatile? I can not only write TV scripts, but record an entire podcast in here.
Well, I think that's the beauty of the podcasting equipment is we've tailored ourselves a little system here that fits in a briefcase-sized Pelican case and plugs into the computer, and we just record, man, and we can just rock and roll. And that's the plan for this thing, is to take it on the road and make it mobile.
And you've already done a little bit of that with last week's show, talking to Daniel Horner about his experience at the sniper match. And as we get going into this new year and head into some more trips, we're going to have more on-location podcasts, which is going to be even more fun.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff. And I tell you, one thing about that Daniel and Tyler interview that was interesting was we did that at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, 0800 as far as they're concerned, and that was the fourth day of that sniper competition. And in the previous 72 hours, those guys had slept probably, what they're telling me, probably a total of between 6 and 7 hours.
Whew.
So Daniel was good to go, but Tyler, who's already a soft-spoken guy anyway, was, you know, he's pulling the headset off, and he's yawning, and he's doing all of this stuff. And so the whole time I'm recording with them, I'm continuing to bump his level up, and in the recording, you know, I listen back to the recording, you can hear him kind of, he's kind of low, and Daniel's really there in the recording, and then Tyler starts to come in, and about the 17-minute mark in that whole thing, I finally got him boosted up enough to where we could really hear him. It was pretty interesting stuff.
Sometimes people have a hard time projecting themselves anyway over a microphone. Then you put a guy who's been on limited sleep out running around in a very intense competition like that. Yeah, I can see where that would cause a few issues.
Well, we know just from personal experience covering it back in 05 how demanding it is, and time-wise, and spending overnight on the land nav and things like that, the night insertion.
Mm-hmm. And on our job was making TV there. We weren't engaged in the match itself. I can't imagine what those guys go through on top of just physically being there like we were, to have to make those shots and do those things under duress the way they have to.
Yeah. Yeah, quite a undertaking, and again, they've got bragging rights over past AMU winners Johnson and St. John, because this was their first time entry. So, you know, Johnson and St. John, their first time, they ended up second, mm-hmm. before winning an unprecedented back-to-back championships. So
what is that now? In like 7 years, the AMU has won that three times.
Yeah,
now?
Yeah, taking it down three times. Pretty awesome.
Work out and shoot. That's what they do.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, and that's another thing about that conversation was that we found out that's not just what they do. I mean, they have a really serious and legitimate job within the Army, and that is creating the training doctrine and implementing that. And a number of those guys are getting ready to deploy sometime, you know, here in the near term to go and do that again and be a part of the war zone to do that.
And that's across all the teams. I don't think a lot of people realize, for example, I was just down there maybe a week before you were there to work with the shotgun team and Josh Richmond and a few of the other guys who, here they are right off of the Olympics, are now about to head to Afghanistan to train Afghan soldiers, and they will spend anywhere from 3 to 6 months on their deployments training the troops over there, you know, developing the marksmanship skills for the Afghan soldiers. And I don't think a lot of people realize those guys do all that.
I think that's going to be an interesting thing to learn about as they do that deployment, because on the face of it, you might be thinking, well, what is an international shotgunner going to be able to teach, you know, warfighters? What is his role? And that, I think, will be an interesting thing to explore with those guys.
Yeah, and that was something when I had a chance to sit down with Sergeant Richmond and talk to him. That was the first question that popped into my head. And he told me some interesting things, just, you know, beginning as small as the fundamentals of squeezing your trigger. Those are things that, you know, we all know but are lost on them. And he's going to be on with us at some point. Maybe during his deployment, but definitely after, if we get that worked out. And I'll let him tell some of those stories of the things they do. I think that will be very interesting to hear his experience over there and training those people.
That's exciting stuff, man. I'm looking forward to that very much. And that's one of the things we need to continue to drive home. As people are starting to pick up on this podcast, we need feedback. We need people to you know, sign in and hit us on the Facebook page or email through shootingusa.com. Let us know what you want us to be talking about. Let us know who you want us to be talking to, because we can make that happen, and that's what this is for.
That's the great thing about the podcast, is we have an unlimited supply of resources that we can go to. If you want to hear from someone specific or about something specific, we can make that happen, either right here in the office, sitting at my desk if need be, or out on the road with any one of the locations we go to.
Simple to do. One thing, though, that has been feedback for me, at least here, just since I've started this thing in a couple of weeks, people asking about the equipment specifically. And, you know, it's as simple as just, hey, here it is, a couple of Audio Technica headsets with the microphones and a Behringer 8-channel mixer, and I'm plugging it into GarageBand, and we're making audio files and uploading them to Podbean. And that's it, man. Simple stuff.
Yeah, there's really, when you look at the grand scheme of the things that we do here on the television production side, this is really small potatoes. This is not a difficult undertaking for someone else to be involved in and do. And, you know, we're making it happen on a Tuesday afternoon just hanging out in the office.
You bet.
Enough said right there.
You bet. Well, that's an interesting point, too, and I think we should move into that, is what have you been working on here lately?
Well, I'm in the thralls of Impossible Shots. Doing some things there. I'm trying to get back in the groove today. As you know, I took a few days off to disappear for deer season. We can tell stories about that later. But I am getting ready to start a new Impossible Shot with Jerry Michalak. Jerry has a Mossberg 930 in his name, the JM gun, and Jerry is going out to show that he is the fastest shotgun shooter on the planet. And he sets up a full gun, 9 rounds, puts a piece of steel up, and he goes for it. And it is the most incredible shotgun shooting I have ever seen. I've never seen speed shotgun shooting anywhere close to what he's going to do in this one.
That's awesome. I mean, that kind of reminds me of the one that he did with the X-Rail, and he's just pounding that piece of steel. But I'm sure at some point, it's not about how fast you can pull the trigger. It's got to be a combination of pulling the trigger and still seeing the target and having a gun that can actually function that fast.
Yeah, Jerry has to have a gun that quite simply will cycle that fast. Not all shotguns can cycle that fast as he can. And the biggest thing that I learned and will come out in this piece is it's not just about squeezing the trigger as it is about understanding and using the gun's recoil to his benefit. He is making the gun on every level work for him. Part of its cycle process is helping him get to the next shot and get the next shot off, which is something that I would not have even considered in my, you know, mere mortal mind of the shooting world.
You're dealing with the immortal Jerry Michalak, and the fantastic. I mean, there's we could probably write a book on just simple on Jerryisms.
Yes,
you know, things you've heard Jerry say that apply to shooting or apply mm-hmm. to his mindset when he is shooting. And mm-hmm. I've got a whole segment of that stuff coming out of the AR15.com Rockcastle Pro-Am show, which actually we're going to wrap Friday. We're going to wrap this week Friday and deliver to the network. So.
Yeah, and that's going to be really interesting. Tell us a little bit about what that is, because really this is like 3 minutes inside the mind of a genius, as I understand it. What do you got coming?
Well, what it is, you know, it's the story of what that match is and why that match is unique and why 530 people come to, you know, outside of Bowling Green, Kentucky to shoot multi-gun. It is that, but one of the key aspects that draws those levels of numbers is the pro clinics at that particular match. If you're involved, or even if you haven't signed up to be a competitor, you can still attend these pro clinics and have, you know, basically 2 hours with some of the best multi-gun shooters in the game. And the one pro clinic that always draws a huge crowd is Jerry. And so we hang a mic on Jerry and we follow him as he takes his core group of guys here through his pro clinic. It worked so well last year that I knew I had to pay more attention to it this year. And of course, just miles and miles and miles of content. It's so much content, literally, out of probably 40 minutes of Raw. I could have done 40 minutes, but we don't have that much time in the show. So take 40 minutes of him and give me 3.5 minutes of his best stuff, and mm-hmm. it is fantastic.
Well, talk about a teaser for that match. You just said it. You're going to get to see in our coverage 3 minutes of Jerry teaching, but if you go there, you get 2 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Of Jerry teaching. That is unbelievable.
And it's free.
And it's free. It's part of the deal. You know, you can drop good money to get Jerry to teach you something in a clinic, or you just shoot this match and it's part of it. That's incredible.
Well, it is, and out of his own mouth, this is the kind of thing that he sells when you hire him to teach you down at his place in Louisiana or have him come to your range or whatever. A lot of the pro shooters do that as an additional source of income, Jerry included. But in this case, he's giving back to the sport, a sport that he loves, a sport that you know has to continue to grow. And the only way it grows is if you have new shooters. You have guys who are AMs who get excited about it. And ultimately, the goal is get those guys doing it because they're going to go back and bring guys from their club. And all of those people need equipment. And that means gun sales, and that means equipment sales. So that's the core. That's the reason to do it.
Well, in this match, you know, you and I were there to cover. We really learned that this match is exceptional in that regard of attracting amateurs, because you and I not only went there with our crew and covered it, but we competed in the AM match, and that was right where we belonged. And it was the first three-gun match I have ever shot. And what an experience that was for us, and to see what they do to draw in and attract amateurs on a first-hand basis.
You bet. You know, making the courses of fire doable for that skill level, for the guy who's at the club level. I'm going to call the biggest success this year at that match for me is that the equipment ran 100%.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And as you remember, you and I shared the long guns. We shared the shotgun and we shared the rifle, and there was not a hiccup out of either one of those guns.
Nope.
That made my day. And then, of course, you just absolutely shined with the shotgun. and you know, I mean, to your credit, you should. You're a shotgun shooter, and you did, and that was what was very impressive.
Yeah, that match, that particular three-gun match was about as tailored for me as a three-gun match could go, in that probably 60% of that match was with a shotgun, and the other 40% was broken apart between rifle and pistol. And if there is one gun that I can firmly say I can run with confidence, and whatever the scenario is, it's a shotgun. So fortunately, you had a Terran slicked up Benelli and just said, "Here you go, new guy, run this," and that made my life easy.
You bet, man. It was literally like take a Ferrari or a Lamborghini and then have it tuned by somebody, you know, and now you've got one of the finest Italian shotguns that's been tuned by one of the top guys in the game. I mean, how can you go wrong? That gun is something special, man.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And there'll be more about that particular gun in a Shooting USA episode coming.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't say enough about having good and dependable equipment when it comes to three gun, because in any of the shooting sports, if your guns don't work or your gun doesn't work, it's over for you.
Right.
And in the case of three gun, you've multiplied the disaster factor of a gun problem times three.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a major accomplishment, just to have all of the stuff run and to really torture test the shotgun and the rifle, in that, you know, we used them double. Those two guns basically shot that match twice.
Shot it twice.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, and this was something that I really took from my first three-gun experience, and I want you to sound upon this, that not only are you tripling the amount of guns, you're tripling your physical work. I was physically exhausted when that was over, and I consider myself a pretty fit guy. I consider you a fit guy, too. We were gassed when that thing was over.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things. You know, in that particular match, we shot with the RO squad, and that means we shot the entire match in a day. That's a drag, man. But the ROs do it at all the matches around the country. It is a huge physical undertaking. Not only the shooting and all of the physicality involved there, but constantly having to go up and down range to reset targets, tape targets, and to be a part of the squad. You know,
yes.
there were a couple of stages that would be called jungle run stages, where there's probably 30 feet of elevation change in a in a 25-yard course of fire. So that's up and down that hill through the woods,
yep,
bending over, picking up the steel, putting it down. I mean, if you look at it on paper, it's not that big a deal. It's not that demanding. But when you get out there and you're physically doing it, and you've done it, you know, for four stages before lunch, and then it's a walking lunch because we're, you know, under time and we got to get going with the sun, and we're worried about not only shooting and everything else, but also making television out of it.
Yeah.
It's a demand. There's a lot to it.
Mm-hmm. That is an interesting dynamic that you and I we talk about it with each other, but we rarely get to tell people about it, is when you and I go shoot matches for these experiences, it's a double-edged sword, because we have to A, shoot the matches in a day. No matter what the match is, we have to dedicate a day to getting that done. But I'm also shooting a stage. Take Bianchi Cup, for example.
Oh, yeah.
When I shot Bianchi this year, I had to shoot the mover wearing a microphone while talking to my camera with a Midland XTC camera clipped to the bill of my hat hanging down in front of my eye. So there's a little bit of extra stuff that goes on when we go shoot these matches. And don't get me wrong, I love it. It is one of the great parts of this job, but it certainly makes for difficult shooting performances sometimes,
well,
doesn't it?
It's definitely not one you can phone in. That the Midland on the hat on the mover at Bianchi this year worked out fantastically, by the way, and made the show, which was fun to see.
Uh-huh.
It's an interesting thing, because especially to ask any of these pro shooters to wear the head cam.
Yes.
Many of them will do it. Mm-hmm. They're just like, yeah, sure. You know, if they're already wearing muffs, it's not a big deal to just put on these other earmuffs that happen mm-hmm. to have the camera built into the strap. But some of them won't. Some mm-hmm. of them, you know, even if they're ahead in the match, like, for instance, it was just at Steel Challenge, and Dave Zavigny is commanding the rimfire match, mm-hmm. so much so that he ends up setting a world record. And Dave's a very intense guy, and I've known Dave probably coming up on 15 years. So I know how to approach him about something like that. Hey, how are you feeling? Yeah, I'm feeling really good, John. It's going good. All right, Dave, you know, what do you think about just changing out and wearing these muffs? It'll have a helmet. It'll have a camera on the head. And he's like, no way.
Yeah.
No, dude, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I just really can't change anything right now. Mm-hmm. And that's just speaks to his mindset, but that's everybody's different.
Yeah, yeah.
We're at IDPA Nationals, and Taryn's happy to wear the thing everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We're at USPSA Nationals last year, and Lita McLangan's happy to wear the thing
right.
on any stage. You know, I'm just like, hey, man, here, try these on. Okay,
yeah.
No problem. It's an interesting aspect to what we do, because
yes.
not only are we wearing head cams and mics, but we've got cameras behind us, and we're
yes.
expected to try to perform at a respectable level in these
yes.
matches, but at the same time be prepared to perform at a high level in terms of creating television and be the television host that people are expecting to see.
Right, and that's really the priority, is to not just anybody can just shoot a match, but we've got to shoot a match and deliver that across television, deliver a message, deliver a story, deliver the importance of why people need to be out here doing these things, and that certainly changes a lot when it comes to your shooting performance.
Well, I'll tell you this, it's working, because I have, in the last 3 years, every single match I go to, I talk to at least one person, if not more, who says, the reason I'm here is because I saw you do it last year, and I said, that looks like fun, and or if John and Mike can do it, I can do it, and there you go.
I mean, that's our reward.
That's
why we do it.
Steel Challenge, that's Bianchi Cup, that's Multigun, that's USPSA, that's Pro-Am. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially Pro-Am, and that's
yes.
one not to be missed, man. Pro-Am is fantastic.
Yep, yep. Yeah, now, has that coverage aired yet?
Yes. We ran that Pro-Am show, I guess, about 2 weeks ago now, and that was a fun deal, meeting the Coley and Clagg family.
Yes.
Shane Coley from the USAMU,
yep.
fantastic shooter in the open division and in production division now, but also meeting his mom and dad, and his sister and brother-in-law and their family, and seeing three generations shoot at a level. That was neat for me. So that was a fun little sidebar story that we did there.
Now, for those who don't know what the Pro-Am is, this is Phil Strader's match. Phil's mm-hmm. the USPSA president, and this is an all-steel knockdown match. So you just shot it. That's got to be rewarding, because everything you shoot goes bang and falls over.
Right. It was a match format originally conceived back in the early 90s by a guy named Yank Price, in conjunction with Jim, for then American Shooter. And the idea was to make a pistol match that would really translate for television. So it has earned the name, the moniker, the made-for-television pistol match, all the way back to that point. Phil revived it, and he's continuing to have success with it. Moved it out of Oklahoma and moved it to Florida, down at Universal Shooting Academy. Fantastic venue for shooting. Fantastic venue for families. You know, they've got Legoland. They've got Universal Studios. They've got Disney World. All of these attractions that Orlando and the surrounding areas draw, and easy access to this range. It's a flat range. This is also where they just moved the Steel Challenge. And, you know, of the three matches shot at the Steel Challenge, there were two world records set. BJ
wow.
in the limited center fire match finally broke the 90-second barrier.
Ooh, that's incredible.
88 seconds and change. Dave Zavigny just decimated BJ's standing rim fire world record. You know, it really speaks to how accommodating that particular range is and how setting a match where all of the stages face the same direction and are affected by the sun the same way can really add to the top shooters' performances.
Yeah, that was going to be my question is, and you were there, and this just happened. How in the world did a pair of world records be broken like that? Tell me about the range and some of the edge that gave some of the shooters.
Well, it's flat, first of all. Unlike Piru, there's, you know, you don't have to climb a hill to get from one stage to another, and all of the bays, all of the range bays, faced west. So they receive morning and midday sun evenly across the targets. The bays and the berms are all a darker color.
Earthen. Yeah, we'll go with that.
A darker earthen color. Is that a word? And with the white steel painted in between each shooter's string, it's absolutely the best target presentation you can ask for. No dust. And in, you know, the first week of November, it was absolutely flawless Florida weather. It was high 70s at 8 o'clock in the morning and never really bumped up over 85 in the middle of the day. It was just simply beautiful weather, no dust, good target presentation, and everybody just really excelled. They are going to be faced with the fact that when you take a match that's ingrained over the course of 30 years and move it, the first year, it's not going to be very well attended, and that was the case this time.
Yeah,
I think that there is a strong core group of shooters in the Florida and surrounding areas that will begin to support this match just like it was supported when it was in California by the California shooters and the Arizona shooters, because, frankly, not a lot of those people were there. But well, Jim O'Young was there.
Yeah.
You know, he won't miss
good
it.
Jim. No, he'll never miss
Jim
it.
Jim made it out.
Well, that's a big change for people. We, you know, that match has gone about as far across the country as it possibly can, going from West Coast to Florida like that. So that's a big flip-flop. And like you said, 30 years that it had spent out there in Piru. So that's a big change. And when changes like that happen, there are certainly things that go in and around that. But that match is going to be around forever. There's always going to be people who shoot steel. Steel is always fun to shoot. The Steel Challenge will live on forever.
Well, it's an interesting thing because I interviewed Casey, you know, and he's the Open Division champion. He's the only four-time Steel Challenge champion now.
Yeah, Casey Eusebio.
Casey Eusebio. And he did it this year with a Glock, which many people said couldn't be done. Mm-hmm. You'd have to do it with a steel frame gun now. He did it with a Glock. Wow. A highly modified Glock, but still a Glock.
Yeah.
And I asked him in that interview, have you shot your best Steel Challenge? And, of course, the answer is no. What is the next step in the progression here? What, you know, when will you say, I've done all that I can do? And, you know, it's one of those things. There are so many facets that go into this thing. You know, you got to draw the gun so many times. You have to break each shot so many times that I don't think the perfect match will ever be shot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and you just hit it. I mean, you've got to shoot 4 and 5 strings of fire across all these stages to be on 100%. For that amount of time and that amount of shots and draws and everything, that would be amazing. I don't know that that's possible.
Yeah. Fun stuff.
Yeah, now that's pretty much the last match of the calendar year, really, as we head ourselves towards Thanksgiving, as far as what we're going to cover, correct?
Yeah, it was an interesting October and November for me. A couple of matches moved in terms of the calendar. They changed their dates, and we added a couple of matches, and so that meant I stacked up with six match coverage deals in a matter of about 8 weeks.
Wow.
And so that's a ton of travel all at once, like through October and into November. But that means at this point we're in town through the holidays, which is good
because I got a ton
of stuff I need to write. We're going to do a wrap this week for something that was, you know, on the leading edge of that heavy travel season for me. Mm-hmm. But it's time for me to play some catch up before we get into the big deal. Everybody's big deal, and that's, you know, SHOT Show.
That's an interesting line, too, before we get to SHOT Show, on what you're going to be spending your time. People always wonder about shows and when they go on the air. Well, you had six matches in a row.
Yeah.
Well, when you have six matches in a row, do you know what you don't do? Is write a match.
Well,
and that's the nature of this beast, is that we spend, and typically it's the spring, but you're right, this was a very unusual fall.
Yep.
So it went spring, summer, and fall of us just all being gone and being in different places, and now it's we're home and we're in our offices, and it's time to grind out content headed towards the holidays.
You bet. The my shelf is thick right now. I was fortunate to be able to slam together the thing that we're going to wrap on Friday, which was the AR15.com Rockcastle Pro-Am coverage. Right behind that, I had the IDPA Nationals, my first time to an outdoor IDPA match, a big IDPA match held outside. I've got the segments written on that, and that's all come through, but that'll be immediately wrapped. After that, I need to get into the Fallen Brethren 3-gun. That was a new thing. That was a new match that we added. In there, I've also got the USPSA Handgun Nationals, the trip out to Vegas. Can't forget about that. And then immediately after Handgun Nationals, I've got a trip back up to Bowling Green and to Rockcastle to do a story with Andy Horner as he sets one of his courses afire at the Blue Ridge Mountain 3-gun, his signature match, where you know, he demands a lot from his shooter. And, you know, in the course of talking with him as he does these, he says to me, I don't want a 20 or 30 second stage. I don't want a 45 second stage. You know, my timeout here is 2 minutes and 40 seconds. I want to push these guys, and I want to use the natural terrain here at Rockcastle to do it. And in the one course of fire that I selected to watch him kind of marinate on and lay out and then build, he does just that. And the top shooters in that match, the best guys in the world, Daniel, his son included, are in the 70, 75 second range on that particular course of fire. It's
that's amazing.
Unbelievable. And they're shooting the whole time. That's going to be a fun piece. Then there's the Steel Challenge, like we were just talking about. And then I've got to sprinkle in a couple of pro tips there. So I've got plenty of stuff to work on, man.
I'll be honest. I thought I had a lot on my plate heading into this fall, and I think you were leading the pack here as far as work that stacked up towards the end of the summer and the early fall.
Now, it'll all go well. You know, everything was very well focused, I think, in the field, and as I'm continuing to move through these things, the Rockcastle stuff worked out fantastically. IDPA worked out very well. And as I remember and I look at notes from all of these projects, the stuff will just fall right into place. So the big thing is we need to continue, as you know, we need to continue wrapping these segments and making shows.
Yes.
And that's time-consuming.
Yes,
and that involves a lot of people. That's not just us getting on a plane and going to a match that's over 3 days later. That's there's a lot that goes into that, and I've actually got that coming this week for one deal. So
yeah, that involves multiple photographers. You involve all the producers who have a story or segment, as we name them, but they're all individual stories in a show. Now we're bringing in the boss man. We're bringing in Big Jim, because as everyone knows, he is the face. He is the voice. So we got to write the copy for him, or in this case, you're writing the copy for him, as it's your show. And all of that stuff is time consuming, and show wraps can be a big deal around here, around this office. And between the two shows, we have to squeeze in 36 of those a year.
You bet.
That's eating up some time.
You bet. You know, it's not all the glamour that you might see at the end of the day. It doesn't. It's not quite as polished after you pull back the curtain and see what makes this thing work.
No, that's true. But it does create some of the more fun days when we all lock ourselves back in the gun room. You know, you guys at home who watch the show, you know what the gun room looks like. Well, we go on an all day lockdown in there, and it's record, it's get shots right, it's make sure everything is set up, make sure the show times out right, get that timed out show right to our editor Andy, who is the final man to assemble all that stuff. It's a process, but they're always entertaining days for some reason. There's just something entertaining about being in there putting wraps together. I like the smirk on your face.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some success. We've had some success pulling together blooper reels out of some of the proxy clips, and you've seen some of those if you watch either the Facebook pages or the YouTube channel. So it's always good. Jim doesn't end up in those blooper reels too terribly often. He's got a way about him. If he actually blows a take, he makes sure that the take is fully blown and can't be used as a blooper. I think he does that.
He knows what he's doing.
That's one of those things that you gain when you gain the kind of experience in the track record that he has in television and radio. That's one of the things I do like about this podcast, man. It's a lot like radio, and
yes.
that's where the old man comes from. So
yeah, that's you know, Big Jim back in the day, back before you and I were even ideas in our parents' minds. The Big Jim was doing the radio thing.
Actually, I was around, but I wasn't of any use to anybody at that point.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if you know this, but do you know my first broadcast job was in radio?
I think that's fantastic.
I started out in radio when I was in junior college. I picked up a morning radio DJing job based on the promise that I was about to go to broadcast school. So I guess we all started in radio on some
level. That's
totally
awesome.
Isn't that amazing?
You were the burner on the morning drive.
19 years old, and yeah, I can be your radio DJ. I'm totally about to go to broadcast school for this 2 years later.
Sweet. Back to what I was talking about a minute ago, though, and that is that we are headed straight towards SHOT Show.
Yeah, this is it. This is the big one. And anybody who knows anything about SHOT Show knows if you're involved with it, it's the biggest thing in your year. And for us, it is absolutely the biggest thing in the year. We make our hour special out of it. We take everyone who's on our staff goes out there, and that is the only time that we take a crew that large. But that's what it takes to make an hour's worth of television in 4 days.
Yep. Well, I'm looking forward to a couple of things. First of all, we made our reservations well enough in advance to get some decent rooms.
Yes, so, which is nice.
we're not staying like in the broom closet at Harris this time, so that's pretty cool. They've moved the Golden Moose Awards, I just saw this yesterday, from the Hard Rock, where it has been for so long, to a venue in the Venetian,
yes.
Which I think is going to be fantastic.
That's going to be great. The Golden Moose Awards are the Outdoor Channel Network Awards Party. So if you're an outdoor TV guy like us, this is our Emmys.
You bet.
That's the way I can describe it.
And as a matter of fact, to that point, the fan favorite voting is up on OutdoorChannel.com and on the Outdoor Channel Facebook page. There's a way to link through, and there's a way to select your favorite television show, and your favorite television show host. You won't find John Scouten or Mike Irvine listed in that, but you will find the Boomer. You'll
That's right.
find the Bassman, who is, by the way, it's worth a mention, steadily approaching his 20th year in reporting the shooting.
Isn't that amazing?
That is something special, man. Mm-hmm. That is something special. So look for that as an interesting, you know, that'll be a nice little caveat in some of the new shows in 2013.
Will be
some retrospectives from Jim and some, you know, thoughts on things that have occurred and things we've done well and things we haven't done well over the last 20 years.
Yep. Here's some perspective on that, and you can share even more stories than this than me. That means that the first time I saw Jim Scouten hosting the gun show, I was 11.
Hey.
Isn't that amazing?
You're trying to make me feel old is what you're trying to do. Anyway. Whatever.
Let me drop that on you.
The first time Jim Scouten was on television with guns, I was behind the scenes carrying sandbags and pushing brooms and trying to scrape together freelance money to get myself down to MTSU and buy some ramen noodles. So, not that much older than you, but still.
Still.
Yeah.
That's still been a minute ago.
Yeah, it's been there.
Fun stuff.
That's good, man. That's good. Well, I've got a couple things I need to wrap up this afternoon, but we've made it to the 32-minute mark, just like that.
Wow. See, this thing goes by so fast. Hopefully it goes by this fast when you're sitting at home listening to it, jogging down the road and helping us kill your 5K afternoon
That's
run.
That's what I'm talking
However
about.
However you utilize the Shooting USA podcast.
If you turn the podcast on when you started on the treadmill and you had the treadmill at 6 miles an hour, you have now burned 485 calories.
Attaboy. That was
congratulations.
Some quick math. Folks, he doesn't have a calculator or a pen or nothing.
He actually made that up.
Did he? Oh, well, I was buying it for what it's worth.
Knowing what I know from running on the treadmill for 32 minutes.
There you go.
You know, it's about 450 calories. Anyway. All right. Well, that's a good one, man.
That's a good one. This has been fun. We'll sit down and do another one for you for everybody next week.
You bet. All right. Talk to y'all soon.